Welcome to the Untangling Web3 podcast. Today, we're exploring Blue Sky, the decentralized social media competitor to X that seems to be grabbing all the headlines. So there's a lot of chaos at X, paid features, polarizing figures, and a flood of controversies. And with that, millions of people are looking to alternates. Blue Sky is stepping in, and with fresh ideas, user control, and a bit of a focus on decentralization, today, we're going to unpack what the buzz is all about and if Blue Sky really is the next big thing. So let's jump into it. So Jack, what do you know about Blue Sky?
Yeah, well, this is something very, very interesting. And we've kind of talked about some of the concepts on this right in the past a lot of times. But now it's hitting a flashpoint where lots of people are leaving Twitter in droves and actually now they're joining this Blue Sky. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, when even people like the Bristol Clifton Suspension Bridge Twitter account are now leaving Twitter, right? You know, there's something wrong. And yeah, as you said, there's lots of problems with Twitter. We can get into that. And what I know about Blue Sky is it's a very different Web3-like approach. It's not really pushing the Web3 angle, but it's taking this kind of protocol-heavy open model to social media. So yeah, super interesting. Why don't we let's dig into the details.
Yeah, I do think it's important to talk about some of the background because that is one of the motivations as to why Blue Sky's kind of pitched the way that it has. You mentioned there's a lot of people leaving, and you know, let's talk about why they're leaving. Like, we're both on X, we've been on, you know, Twitter/X for a while. It's changed a lot, I think, in my opinion. Like, just the high level intro is, it just seems a lot more angry recently. Like, I'm looking at my feeds, and if they're a reflection of the things that I'm into, then I'm a much more angry and hateful person than I would like to admit. And we've kind of talked about the fact that this is maybe across the board on social media, where, you know, you have these algorithms, these, you know, machine learning algorithms, where you just say, okay, optimize engagement, get people to be as addicted to the screen as possible. And what those algorithms realize is that people really do care about hate and greed. They're the things that get attention. So that's the content that is being prioritized to our feeds. And that's why a lot of, you know, X right now seems quite angry. And maybe it's one of the motivators for Blue Sky, potentially.
Yeah, for sure. I think the opaqueness of the algorithms that drive social media is one of the big problems we've all been having. And it's kind of, you know, we're a bit like the frog that's been boiled very slowly on this, right? Because it wasn't always like that back in the start of Twitter and even Facebook. It was this kind of big linear feed of posts, right? Your Facebook wall or your Twitter feed, they were kind of just, what are people saying? It wasn't necessarily this doom scrolling endless timeline of stuff that the algorithm thinks you need to look at. And as you said, you know, we spoke about this with Annie as well in the mental health episode, the stuff being pushed is the stuff that triggers the animal hate fight or flight response in you a lot of the time. So yeah, that's one of the big ones is A, that we are being pushed this kind of content, and B, we don't know that much about, you know, the algorithms behind it that are doing this, right? And then coupling that with what's actually happened to Twitter specifically, or that the platform formerly known as Twitter X, what's happened with that since Elon Musk took it over, and the move towards a kind of, you know, free speech model. And then again, not a problem with free speech whatsoever. I think it's a good thing, but it's kind of opened the floodgates for more of the more divisive kind of content to be pushed towards top of our feeds, and the certain, you know, public figures being allowed back on there after being banned for violating terms of service and things like that. That's also put a lot of people off Twitter generally, right?
Yeah, like I kind of agree with you there that a lot of people are kind of upset that, say, the Donald Trumps and the Andrew Tates of the world are back on there. I personally think that is fine. Like, you should have, you know, freedom of speech. But it's the fact that their content, because it's divisive, because it's quite clickbaity, is the thing that's always at the top of the feed. And, you know, that's just personal choice. And I think that's one of the problems that's been highlighted here is we don't have personal choice over what the feed is actually prioritizing. And that's a big reason why I'm getting a bit, you know, dissatisfied with X. Is I just want to see nice puppies and kittens all day, not hate speech, like things about migration, all this kind of stuff. Like, that is not what I want to look at when I'm doom scrolling for 8 hours a day, let me tell you. But there's other things as well. I think that, you know, everyone's kind of hailing Elon Musk as this great businessman who's come in and cut, like, what is it, 75% of the workforce or something like that. But that, in, you know, there has been some issues with that. I know a few small businesses that used to plug into Twitter and use the data and things like that, and they're saying it's difficult to get in contact with anyone these days. It's actually difficult to use, like, the services maybe have been a bit more restrictive and limited lately. But yeah, I think overall there's definitely a reason why Blue Sky is getting a lot of the headlines right now.
Yeah, and actually that's a good point you raised about people, you know, not just the lurkers, which is like 90% of people who are just angry about or annoyed about what they're being presented with, but then how you get engagement on the platform has very much changed for the same reasons, right? The other side of that coin, as you said, a lot of people, businesses, individuals are constantly having to second guess what this algorithm is going to push, and has, you know, when you work it out, then you tend to push things that might be worse, things that don't represent you know, the real you behind it. So it's made people a little bit more disingenuous. It's made it, you know, a place where people now click farm and clickbait. You know, we taught you that word, Alec, right back at the start of the show. People will put things out there knowing this is the kind of thing that the algorithm is pushing. And it's what changes behavior on both sides. And I think it's dissatisfied a lot of people on both sides. And you add into that, you know, what's happened with monetizing Twitter and having this tiered system of the premium, being able to use different features at different price levels. It's all just become a bit of a zombie of what it used to be, in my opinion. So yeah, what is Blue Sky then? So what is the counter offer that Blue Sky has made? Because obviously this is something that's come from, and we're going to the history, right? It's come from Jack Dorsey originally, who is also, you know, the original founder or co-founder of Twitter. So from right back in the inception of Twitter, he had a vision for it. It's now no longer that vision, really. So why did he start Blue Sky?
Yeah, so my understanding was he started this while he was still the CEO of Twitter, and it was just a research project. He wanted to look into the concept of decentralized social networking and explore like how that could affect, you know, user control of the data and the content distribution. So Jack Dorsey is obviously a big advocate of Bitcoin, has been for a while. So it's kind of like a match made in heaven, where he understood the value of decentralized finance, of Bitcoin, and all this kind of stuff. And he was also working, you know, at the forefront of Twitter, and he just kind of married those two ideas. And that is, well, I guess the one liner of Blue Sky. It's this decentralized social networking platform. And, you know, I think it's been off the ground. They've been, you know, been involved from 2021, I think. But, you know, it's to end of 2024 when we're recording this. They've hit 15 million users. That's kind of like a drop in the ocean compared to like the Facebooks of the world, which have billions, even Twitter, which is close to a billion. But I think that was mostly because they were in this kind of stealth mode where it was an invite only type of thing, where they were just inviting journalists, creators, tech enthusiasts, just to see what they thought of the platform and, you know, kind of, I guess, go from there. And now it started to hit the headlines. And, you know, we kind of get into that stage where it seems like maybe they're hitting mass adoption or starting to, you know, get in the outlets everywhere, and people are starting to take interest in it.
Yeah, exactly. You can't underestimate, I think, the power of Jack Dorsey's DNA running through Blue Sky, even though, as you said, you know, he's not been involved directly or not been CEO directly since 2021. You know, now it's run by someone called Jay Gray. She's been running the show since then. But it's clearly got his DNA running through it. It's got the DNA of early Twitter, right? What, you know, when you and I probably first started using it in the kind of early 2000s, kind of early 2010s, it's got that feel to it, right? It's very much a Twitter clone. So it's not necessarily feature complete with Twitter. It hasn't got all the bells and whistles that you have on Twitter. And, you know, for that reason, people might like it also. It's a bit simpler. It brings back that simplicity. But yeah, it's also worth mentioning that in the background, whilst Blue Sky has been kind of in stealth mode and development, it was, I think, invite only until around February this year or something like that, or definitely this year. And now it's no longer invite only. It's kind of in full public release mode. But in that time, you also had the rise of something called Mastodon, which is a very similar idea. It's this protocol-based decentralized social media framework, but that didn't have necessarily the brand behind this that the Jack Dorsey brings and the whole Twitter story that he brings, right? So that, I think, has only ever peaked at around 2.5 million daily active users. And now it sits at around, you know, just under a million. And as you said, at the minute, Blue Sky, as we say, this is getting 1 million new users per day, right? It's hit about 18 million, actually, I think just today I saw. So yeah, its growth is huge, but it's definitely not the first example we've seen of this kind of social media.
Yeah. So I obviously, in preparation for this, jumped on there, signed up. It was easy. And as soon as you're on there, it just feels like Twitter. Like, it really does feel like early days Twitter, but a bit more kind of, I guess, cutesy is probably the way I'd describe it. Like, you know, being able to select your feeds, a bit more customizable. But I suppose the fact is that, you know, my Twitter account now is deep, like 6 years, 7 years or something like that. So when I go on there, I'm just completely absorbed in everything that's going on in the world. Whereas this one's like, you know, it's a new game. You're kind of working out where everything is, and maybe it doesn't have any of the previous biases of Twitter. So maybe that's a nice thing. But yeah, let's go into some of the tech I think it's worth starting on the tech side, and then we'll go into what that actually means for users. Because you mentioned Mastodon there, and you know, Blue Sky and Mastodon, similar kind of angle, and they both run on this underlying tech, which is called the Authenticated Transfer Protocol, or AT protocol. And the whole point of this is kind of like, I guess, the piping that connects whatever you want to do on top. When we talk about, you know, the goal of this protocol is designed to give users more control and, you know, make networks work together. It's kind of like the Bitcoin, I guess, of this interoperability layer that we talk about when we want to think about users and what they can do in social media networks. So when we think about, you know, X or Threads, you basically have one single company that controls everything. It's a very Web 2 model. Whereas Blue Sky and Mastodon as well, they let users shape their own social media experience, and they can move, you know, their data, their accounts, whatever they want from potential social media networks to another one, to another server, for example, because of this underlying transfer protocol that they're both based on.
Yeah, I think that is the key thing to get your head around, right? And if there's anything, you know, if you're interested in the technology side of Blue Sky and how this is all working, then the key thing to take away is the fact that we are talking about a protocol underneath. So the two key differences, one, as you mentioned, you're going from a single company kind of client server model. So you have a big company behind it, as you said, that's serving everything out to us users. And it's kind of this big central point of failure, but also point of coordination of everything. And then you also have the idea that the data, because of that model, is very much locked in to the platform. So if you wanted to take what you've done, you know, Twitter and Threads, very, very similar platforms, but you can't exactly port your whole history, profile, everything you've ever done, your posts from Twitter to Threads, because they're run by two different companies, right? X and Facebook or Meta.
Yeah.
You have to keep up with all these name changes. but that's another key thing, this portability. So the main concept to get your head around is that now this is a social media model where you have protocols, open protocols, the standards and the specifications are all public and documented, so you can understand how it works if you want to. You can implement your own kind of server for this, which we'll get into as well. And then Blue Sky itself is actually, it's just one app built on top of the protocol. And that is just the first of many that we'll see in the future, right? So the protocol will kind of stay the same or very static like the internet is. And then we'll have these apps built on top of it where you can move the data between them. So it's not like it's disconnecting the protocol for how the thing works from the actual social media app like Blue Sky, which is like a single view into the data that's being kind of passed around and the users that are using this network.
Yeah, I think I'm glad you made that distinction there. Like, effectively, it's federated, right? So users can interact across different servers and still stay connected. So that can work internally, where, you know, we have different versions of people running Blue Sky, say, I don't know, a European server that runs Blue Sky in a certain way. They have GDPR compliance and all this kind of stuff. And then American version, which is more light touch. You could opt into either one of those kind of, I guess, rules and regulations and stuff, but still communicate with one another. So that's like, you know, you've got selections within Blue Sky of exactly how you want to run your day-to-day app. But then, like you said there, you could imagine this going much bigger. Imagine if Threads or Meta or something like this plugged in to the ATP protocol, then I could start to, you know, connect across these different Blue Sky apps with Threads, and then, you know, move my account across, move my followers across, you know, send one tweet out and it connects to both. So it's like interoperability on the internal, which is good because we've got more flexibility. We can choose what we want on the day-to-day, but also then interoperability on the external side, where we can start to have our accounts working across everything. I hate the fact that I have like six different social media accounts, each with a different password. If I want to do one post across everything, it's at a sign into every single one and do one post for each of them. It's bonkers. So yeah, this is definitely in my mind like a future proof way of doing this.
Yeah, and it's kind of similar, you know, to a lot of gamers out there might be familiar with this model where they're playing a game, but the experience they're getting is being given to you from a server of your choice, right? So you can be on a server. I haven't actually played any of these big kind of multiplayer open world games, but you can pick which server you're in and then you'll be playing with different people or in a different landscape or, you know, that kind of thing. So it has been around in gaming for actually quite a while. And I would also highlight there's some interesting aspects to how it all works under the hood, right? So we can just run through a couple. So firstly is this personal data server. So what, as I mentioned, the data isn't locked into Blue Sky. It's part of the protocol. And part of that protocol is each individual user when they sign up, you basically get a handle that's linked to a domain, right? And currently that domain, when by default, when you go to Blue Sky, will be a Blue Sky run domain, but you can choose your own. So connect it to a domain, like a website domain that you own yourself. And under that domain, then you get this personal data repository. And this is similar to, again, we've talked about Tim Berners-Lee and his Solid InRUP project, where he's kind of letting people put data in their own little pods. But all the stuff you do on Blue Sky then is structured into, funnily enough, a Merkle tree, right? So you can see also a bit of the Bitcoin DNA in here. But everything you do is all the posts you create, all the kind of all the content you add is structured into this tree thing, that this Merkle tree structure that
this
you can
tree
then
thing.
Search.
And you're doing like a PhD in this stuff.
Sorry, I don't want to go into all the detail, but it's very efficient tree structure that is all underpinned by your domain. So all links back to your handle and domain. And there are also some interesting stuff about how the identity works. But yeah, maybe I'll stop there before I lose anyone.
Yeah, I think we've lost 99% of the people that were listening. So should we go into what this actually means in terms of like user features? I think one of the big, like I say, everything is based. The foundation of this is this AT protocol. And that effectively means choice and flexibility, where you can take your data and then start to choose the parameters in which you want to operate on that. So one of the biggest things, which I think is super powerful, is the idea of these custom algorithms. So right now, say, I don't know, the Twitter X's of the world, they're quite opaque, and how the algorithm, you know, prioritizes viral or controversial content to maximize engagement, I don't really necessarily want to see that stuff. What I want to see is, you know, cat pictures only, or they have this thing where it's like My Bangers, where it like just displays users' most popular posts. It sounds quite silly, but that's the kind of stuff that, you know, people actually enjoy. It doesn't, you know, polarize people and get, you know, it's not super controversial. So a big thing here is that Blue Sky lets users pick or create their own algorithm for feeds, so they can, you know, basically offer unprecedented control over whatever content you want to see and curate.
I mean, that's already a big value add that you don't get on X, right? People just choosing the kind of algorithm that they're being exposed to. And again, just to belabor the point, this is Blue Sky's choice as a view into this data that's underpinning it. So someone else could build a Blue Sky competitor in a month's time that gives you a better choice of algorithms, or you can have competition on these algorithms that are offered by different views. So that's going to be really interesting as well. Who can design the best algorithms? A bit like you have in the AI world, people trying to design the best AI models. I think that's something we're going to see as well. So yeah, the custom experience and the customization, you know, some people will like to over-customize, they'll like to get into the weeds. Some people will just want a simple version, right? Like having a simple linear feed of just stuff that's coming in for a small list of curated followers, and they're not getting on their timeline the doom scroll of random stuff and sponsored ads that they're currently getting on X. So I think that's a huge improvement for most people already.
Yeah, definitely. And then the question kind of fits in. So I say I want to see, you know, real news only. Who decides what is real news? Like, that's tricky. Like, the algorithm will prioritize real news, but it won't know what exactly is real news when there's things being created everywhere. So that brings me on to the second point, which is the idea of these labelers. So these are like third-party tools, and they might even be users sometimes that effectively tag content or accounts to categorize for that moderation. It's kind of tricky, like, to do this kind of stuff, right? Mm. When we think about how Twitter exists now, let's take a step back. When we think about news outlets, you know, from the past like 50 to 100 years, we have these big centralized entities, the Guardians, the Telegraphs of the world, that would put out content, and you kind of knew they were accountable. They verified it. If something was lied or some kind of, you know, misinformation came out, they would be held accountable for that. And one of the things that's happened with social media is that anyone can create that content. So the accountability, the misinformation angle is much harder to kind of regulate. What this in my mind is kind of doing is taking a step in the direction of going back towards that point of centralization, where you start to have, say, single points that people trust, like a Telegram of the world that is on Blue Sky. And then I can opt for, I just want real news that comes from Telegram, for example. And I think this takes a step in that direction, having these points that basically categorize and label content out there so that that can then be fed into people's custom configurations for their feeds.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like delegating trust. Again, a kind of term that is a Web3 term. It's all kind of sprinkled through. But you can delegate this job of deciding, you know, what kind of stuff should be labeled as certain types of content to entities that you put some trust in. And that's, again, it's this nice, it's another way in which this is decentralized, not just the data network kind of layer, But at the content layer, this is decentralization, because then you can pick a bunch of different people. You don't have to centralize that trust in one. You can pick a balanced set of entities to label, right? So you're not going to be putting yourself into a silo, because that's something that you could do easily by accident. But you also have the choice to make sure you're not going to be just getting content labeled by certain types of people, certain types of entities. Mm-hmm. You can have both sides of the political divide, for example, in any given country. So that's another really interesting thing there.
I think on this as well, it's kind of like, I wouldn't say that Twitter is not doing this or X is not doing this right now, because they kind of have the community notes section, which is meant to kind of do this ad hoc, like after the fact. But I don't really know how community notes is run. Like I say, this model, it might actually end up feeding things and making them worse. Like, if two different labelers could look at the exact same content in a completely different way, one could say it's real and one could say it's not real. But it's down to me then to choose which label I respect. Say if one is this verified party that I know is authenticated, like Telegraph, for an example, and another one is Dave from down the road in his basement or something like that. Like, that one might say that this vaccine's real, the other one might say it's an absolute, you know, hoax. And then you choose from that point, like, who you respect and who you want to go with and who's actually labeling the content that comes into your feed. So I think quite an important distinction there.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's definitely not going to be a perfect system, ever, probably. Mm. And it will have teething problems and it will take time to iterate. But for me, the big difference here is the fact that the iteration is something that you're going to be going on that journey with the platform. You're going to be able to choose and, okay, this isn't working. My feed's not quite how I want it. I know I can change certain things about it, right? So it gives you, it empowers you as a user to actually make some of those changes. I think that's a very interesting new aspect of this. We've already mentioned one of the other kind of big features, which is these handles based on domains, which is also really interesting because it implies kind of stronger level of ownership to these domains. And because, you know, if you own a domain, you have to pay for that separately to Blue Sky or separately to the app protocol. You have to have, you know, your domain bought on a marketplace or it's registered with a registrar. And not everyone will be comfortable with doing that, but I think we will see a growing adoption of that behavior, people trying to own their own domain, because this kind of thing will become much more important with social media like Blue Sky. So yeah, I think this is really interesting. And again, gives you the similar level of personalization, but an increased level of ownership over domains that you don't have, or over handles that you don't actually have with X right now.
Yeah, and I think the kind of, at first I was like, I don't really see the point in this. Like, this is just me setting up a new handle that just works for Blue Sky. But I think when you take a step back and think about, okay, what's the landscape going to look like in 20 years time or something like that? This handle that you're using here can be used for other applications as well. And the point here is, you know, for a lot of people, this handle will be their first, you know, step into this space, the idea of having your own handle, your domain, all this kind of stuff. But in 20 years time, imagine just having one domain that is then linked to all my accounts, to my payment services, to my, you know, my attack services, everything. Everything can be linked to one single identity. And it starts to get into the realm of like Web3 identity and all this kind of stuff we've talked about previously. But yeah, I think this is quite powerful.
Yeah, and just on that, I think, you know, I don't want to go into all the weeds and the details right now, but it is worth noting exactly that the way identity works in the app protocol, and therefore by how it's used in Blue Sky as well, is it actually does have a digital identity system under the hood, right? So it is using a DID system that, like we've discussed, I think if you want to go into deep dive on the technology there, you can see episode 15 and 16, where we kind of talked about digital identity and the finer points of how that works. But essentially, as you were saying, you are getting a DID document and a persistent digital identity assigned to you when you sign up for this. And that's going to be linked to the domain you have. But one of the interesting things about digital identities and DID documents is that they are inherently extensible. Mm-hmm. So you can always add, as you said, new protocols, new applications in the future. It's one of these things where your digital identity is going to grow in the future. And as you add more services to it, as more platforms adopt this standard. And again, it has the DNA of Bitcoin and Jack Dorsey running through it, because I had a quick look, and the only cryptographic keys they're supporting right now are the same elliptic curve keys that you use in Bitcoin, right? And I think there's a clear reason for that. But these keys are very important, right? Because these are the kind of things that let you sign. So I also didn't mention in the data repository, everything is signed by one of your keys in your document. And you can rotate the keys. You can use it to recover your account. If you lose one of your keys, you can recover it, which is also one of the problems that I had with Mastodon, right? Mastodon, if your server went down, you kind of lost everything, which also put a lot of people off that.
You stop talking about keys and signing. You're getting really nerdy and Bitcoin-y right now.
Sorry.
But yeah, this don't worry. This stuff is important when it comes down to trust and who you are as an individual. To have my entire like online transactional history to my account is actually quite important. When I start on a new account, like say if I want to transact for £1,000, everyone's like, well, I don't trust you, I don't know you. Then you can prove that you are verified on this other platform, for example, but it's not all going to be viewable to everyone. Like there's still like an access control where you can say it's private unless I want to reveal it to someone to prove that something's happened. But we won't deep dive into that too much because the identity episodes kind of touch on that. Another big feature which they kind of discuss is the idea of, you know, you can choose how the feed is actually displayed. Again, I didn't think this was a big thing, like how things are actually displayed on my Twitter feed, but it actually is when you kind of dive deep into it. Like right now, how posts are displayed on your feed is kind of out of your control to a great degree. Like there's a lot of algorithmic interference in this stuff where something from 2 days ago, again, is very clickbaity, might come on your feed first. And they just add another level of control there where you can say, I just want oldest to newest, newest to oldest, the most liked, the most responded, say just from people that I care about, all that kind of stuff. So again, it's less unknown, less black box, and much more transparent and flexible and, I guess, yeah, customizable to whatever your preferences are.
Yeah, I think it's easy to underestimate how important that kind of feature is, because again, that's part of the original flavor of Twitter, was having a single kind of timeline of posts coming in and knowing when it happened. And now when you're doom scrolling, it's like you're just getting information thrown at you in a non-chronological order, and it's just, that's part of the whole nasty experience we have with social media now. It's just the endless, when did this happen, don't know. It's just now presented in front of you. So
the secret, yeah, I think sauce, that's right, really nice. You click on like one video of a puppy and then you're like 100 videos of puppies down, you're like, how the hell did this happen? This shouldn't be my timeline right now.
Yeah, it's pretty horrible, and it's easy to get trapped into it. So I think this is good for a lot of those mental health kind of related topics that we discussed recently as well. But yeah, it's not hard to see how it's gonna appeal to more users. There is other things as well. I've seen the founders talking about how they're committed to making sure that none of the data being put into this platform is going to be used for training AI, for example, which is something that you know, other platforms may not necessarily have committed to and are probably using in the background. And again, because Blue Sky is one view into this, you're also going to have other competitors coming out there, will maybe have stronger guarantees, maybe have different authentication mechanisms, different kind of differential privacy solutions that let you make things more private. So they definitely can't even be publicly scraped to train by other people, right? Because on Blue Sky, anything's public. Okay, someone can scrape it still and train something with it, but at a base level, they're kind of committing not to do that, which is good.
And I think like the overall benefits of this are quite obvious, like much more transparency, much more control. I know exactly why the feed looks like this, why I'm getting this in front of me, and I can control that. But, you know, we've kind of talked about the tech underpinning this, but one of the most exciting things about this is, as we've said, like I've downloaded this and played with it, is how engaging it is, how playful it is, how it feels like, you know, a modern social media experience where a lot of these, you know, decentralized applications we're playing around with, they don't feel like that. They're so tech heavy, you have to download keys and Jack's playing with his keys all the time. Whereas this is just like signing up to a new social media experience, and it is as intuitive and fun as any other social media experience, which I think is one of the best things, because you're going to get Web2 users that don't necessarily have the whole mandate of has to be Web3 in their mind. They use it, and then all of a sudden they've got all these additional features and they're like, oh, that's cool, I didn't know that was a thing. So I can see this really taking off.
Yeah, 100%. I think this has the potential to be the ChatGPT moment for Web3, right? Because they're not, as you said, they're not pushing it as a Web3 thing, but all the things we talk about in Web3, all of that is baked in at the core. And it doesn't have, you know, anything to do with monetization and tokens and stuff like that. But that kind of stuff can be laid in as well for those that want it, which I think is going to be interesting to see how that works. But comparing it again to something like Mastodon, that struggled to gain a bigger user base because it was a little bit too techy. It exposed too much of the inner workings to you, like picking a server. Whereas Blue Sky, they kind of let you default go to one of their main ones that, you know, you can choose to pick another one later if you want to and migrate to, which I think is a much smarter way of doing it. So yeah, they're clearly doing everything right from a user acquisition perspective right now.
And even that server selection thing, like the way I've seen they're doing it is like, you know, what's your focus? Is it you want to go down the tech route, or is it you want to go down the politics route? And that's how they kind of are trying to configure the servers. Like there will be like the advanced options where you can choose a server that's, you know, located here and has this rule set or something like that. But for most people, it'll just be the intuitive. What are your preferences? Do you want to select this server over here? Yes, I do. And again, I think they've really got that. We want to limit the friction or reduce the friction as much as possible in their head, because, you know, Jack Dorsey's been around this space for so long. But it's not all perfect. There are some like minor concerns, like I think, and things they could do better. Like right now, it's not really clear what the funding model is for them. Like they're growing quite quickly. We don't really know how they're going to monetize this stuff. Like you said, they're not going to sell the data to AI. It doesn't seem like there's a premium service that people can pay for. And I guess one of the fears is they're going to go down the X route where they start to have these tiered subscriptions and more features available for premium users, or they're going to start pumping ads everywhere, which obviously limit the user experience. It's hard to know these things. I guess from past, you know, experience, what we've seen from social media giants is they're free for a while, then they get the people addicted and hooked, and then all of a sudden they start throwing ads and overstimulating everyone's eyes. That's one of the things I have. And the other thing is, you know, it's based on this decentralized network. We've talked about how complicated it is under the hood, managing the data and porting the data. Will it scale? Always a question when we have to think about decentralized networks. They're beautiful for so many reasons, but do they scale? Will they scale well? That's a big question as well.
Yeah, they kind of go hand in hand, like how you're going to monetize this whole thing and also how you're going to scale it. And there's already questions kind of related to that. You could say, well, how decentralized is this? If we're all just signing up and going straight to the Blue Sky controlled server, then is this not just repeating the problems of the past? And obviously we still have the option to. And, you know, one point we didn't mention is there are like kind of other, they're called proxy servers in between the kind of main Blue Sky one and individual people hosting theirs. And they're going to be very computational intensive to run. And I kind of envisage we'll also see big companies running their own servers on behalf of large user groups and things like that. So that there's going to be this dynamic level of decentralization that they're going to have to deal with. And but again, I don't think a lot of people are actually coming to Blue Sky for that. They're coming for the user experience. They're coming for the actual product, right? Which is part of what they're getting so right. But yeah, at some point that might come to a head, and how they scale this is going to be tough. And kind of on that point as well, they've got to compete the whole time, right, with all the existing social media networks. Now we've got, you know, probably 7 or 8 that are properly competing with each other at this point. And we always talk about network effects. You need a critical mass. I don't know if we've hit that yet with Blue Sky, but that's why we're recording this today. Maybe we're just on the cusp of that hockey stick, but they're always going to be competing. And will people stay with the platform eventually, right? Will the user experience be good enough to keep them there once they've got there? Yeah. So that's going to be another challenge for them.
Yeah, I think on that point about enterprises running their own servers, I could see like nation states running their own servers. We've seen whole hoo-ha with Brazil trying to close down Twitter, and obviously China cracking down on all, you know, social media from the West and all this kind of stuff. But imagine like if a nation state starts to run their own server and say, okay, citizens, you're only allowed to use this if you use our controlled server. And it's not ideal from like a censorship perspective, but like it is something that I could quite easily see happening. I think the overall thing on this is options are good. You know, we talk about distribution, having multiple options. I think this is definitely a very powerful option that everyone should go and have a look at. Like, I'm on it now and I'm going to try to start using it. And hopefully in like a couple of months, I'll feedback and be like, this is the best thing ever. The only thing I thought that they would plug into it was some kind of concept of, you know, crypto payments and all this kind of stuff. But I saw that Jack Dorsey, despite like it's actually coming, you know, getting $15 million in a Series A from Blockchain Capital, he actually said he doesn't want to hyper-financialize the social experience. So it doesn't look like they're going to put crypto into it anytime soon. But let's see.
Yeah, I think the operative word there is soon, right? I think if the adoption of crypto and Web3 carries on the way it's going, then eventually we'll see it. But yeah, it's not smart, I don't think, in the short term. But yeah, it's definitely one we will keep tabs on. I mean, as I say, you can find Alec and I on there now. You can find the Untangling Web3 podcast on there. So make sure you follow us on Blue Sky to make sure you're getting every episode. And yeah, thank you for listening, wherever you may be. And you can join us next time to untangle a little more Web3.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Untangling Web3.
Don't forget to send us your thoughts, questions, and comments on social media. And be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider to catch the next episode. See you next time to untangle a little bit more of Web3.
The views we express here are our own and do not reflect the views of our employers.